I wasn't going to do it. I was not going to do a podcast today. Told myself all day I was not going to do a podcast. Didn't have a guest. Didn't really have the energy. Didn't feel like I had anything super exciting to talk about. And then the world hands me Dennis Gartman. Jesus Christ, this guy. Unbelievable. You know, I didn't want to do a podcast until I had music set up for, I have a little introduction and a disclaimer that I have somebody doing for me with a little theme song. And I have an outro that I'm preparing also. So that when you put on the podcast, you know, it sounds like an actual production, right? And my intention was to wait for that to be done. My intention was, you know, the next one, number three, I'll put up. It'll be polished. It'll sound professional. You know, I know the sound from the second podcast wasn't fantastic. I sat myself down and I said, Chris, the next podcast you do is going to sound good. And so we had some news this morning on MDXG and on Riot that I will, I guess, talk about now that I've already got this thing on record and I'm going, so I might as well. But I came home today around 4:30, content with not doing anything else QTR related for the day. Sat down, thought about, you know, whether or not I wanted to go to the gym or whether I wanted to tend to my social agenda or whatever I wanted to do with the evening. And I look down and I see a Zero Hedge article. I almost can't. I mean, this is like the Fergie national anthem of the financial world, is really the best way I can describe it. I mean, did you see Draymond Green's face when Fergie sung the national anthem? Because that's... I can't even. I'm sitting here by myself and I'm cracking up. So here's what Zero Hedge writes. When Michelle Caruso Cabrera ran her Riot Blockchain CNBC expose last Friday, sending the stock plunging, experienced financial commentators couldn't help but snicker, having known well in advance the company has been a fraud ever since it decided to, quote, pivot from veterinary products last October to chasing the latest and greatest stock-boosting buzzword of the day, in this case, blockchain, while suckering in countless naive retail investors on the escalator up who would soon take the elevator right back down. Still, many wondered if any more, quote, respected investors would be caught in the bloodbath. As it turned... I can't even fucking read it. As it turns out, the answer is yes. As Dennis... As Dennis Gartman writes in his latest daily letter, none other... Oh, Zero Hedge has such a way with words. None other than the, quote, world-renowned, quote, commodity guru admitted that, quote, Friday was one of the worst days we have suffered through in a very long while. I feel like he fucking writes that every week. I feel like every week we read that. For the simple reason that Gartman was long... in his retirement account, no less, Riot Blockchain. To be sure, Gartman making a bad investment call is hardly news. However, the almost... However, the almost masochistic pride with which Gartman describes the details of his latest, quote, investment, is indeed bizarre. Oh... This is what Gartman wrote in his letter. As for our retirement account, I'm sorry that I'm laughing. I really am. First off, I know it's not funny when somebody loses money. And I know it's annoying to listen to when I'm trying to read something and I'm laughing. But, like, I believe in doing this thing unedited and I'm cracking myself up here. I'm sitting here, stone cold sober, reading this. This is what Gartman wrote to his... subscribers of his newsletter, and I just put on Twitter, I want to know if what he charges, but I don't think anybody has gotten back to me on what he charges, so let me just check here. one guy did just $400 a month. If that's true, that's insane. I should be charging 10 times that. Just for having a modicum of common sense. Somebody actually responded to me, been following Gartman for at least 20 years, ... This tops everything. So this is what Gartman wrote to his subscribers. As for our retirement account, Friday was one of the worst days we have suffered through in a very long while. For coming into the session, we were long a sizable position in a blockchain-focused company that was the victim of a CNBC expose, which sent the shares down more than 20%, and which sent us down for the year to date, having been up about 6% previously. Worse, we... Stop, Chris. Worse, we broke our own rule and bought more shares on the materially weaker opening, and that proved wholly ill-advised, that's a fucking understatement, causing us to say then and all weekend that, quote, if you break the rules, you pay the price, quote. We broke our own primary rule. We paid a very real and a very high price. Lessons have to be learned again and again and again, it seems, or at least we have to learn them over and over and over again. That's what he wrote. If you're a subscriber and you're reading that, lessons have to be learned again and again and again, it seems. Or at least we apparently have to learn them over and over and over again. Folks, we're not talking about lessons like, you know, investing in derivatives in the debt markets, or maybe I didn't understand how credit default swaps worked at first, or it's my first time trading Forex. No, we're talking about lessons like, don't invest in a company that pivoted from being a veterinary product company last October to becoming a blockchain company just 5 months ago, which has a market cap in the hundreds of millions and financials that are less than stellar. So I don't even know where to start with this, aside from the fact that, you know, this is what's wrong with the financial industry. And this is why you're listening to this podcast more than likely, right? I realize that this podcast is not going to apply to everybody out there. It's not going to apply to people that are not interested in finance most of the time, although it may. I realize it's probably not going to catch the attention of retail investors too much. But there is a small cross-section of investors who are fed up with the mainstream media and just pretty much the entire industry in the same way that I am. And if you're listening, there's a good chance you're one of these people. And if you are, you're looking at this Dennis Gartman Riot blockchain thing in the same way that I am, which is just, are you kidding me? I mean, this is incredulous, right? CNBC has this guy on 4 or 5 times a week, probably. I am not imagining things when I say that he is consistently wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to rag on the guy because he gets enough shit, but he is constantly wrong. I mean, this is a guy who said oil was not going to go above $44 a barrel ever again in his lifetime. In his lifetime. In his lifetime. He said oil will not go over $44 a barrel in his lifetime. Right? Forget about the price of oil. Like, how about just inflation? You know? Like, did you adjust for inflation first? In his lifetime. And they have this guy on over and over, and they refer to him as the commodities king. And he has a subscription newsletter. I'm sure the guy has made some great calls in his time, all right? And I'm sure he probably knows more about commodities than I do. Maybe. Maybe. But when it comes to things like, for example, Herbalife, okay, where a certain anchor is looking for information on the company's filings and doesn't want to do any digging, him or herself. I won't be specific because I don't want to blow up anybody's spot. And they send somebody like myself an email and they say, what does the text in this 10K mean when they say blah, blah, blah? And I send them an email back and say, here's exactly what it means. And then I say, man, I would really love to come on and debate Tim Ramey the next time you have him on. I'm not asking to be the sole, you know, voice on Herbalife, although I would like to be the counterpoint for when you have somebody coming on that's cheerleading and is bullish on the stock, right? What they will do is they will take that information that I send them. They will use it on the air. They will use that as part of their preparation and part of their exposition for an interview. And then they will tell me politely to take a walk and they will do their segment. And that will be followed by Dennis Gartman, generally at some point. And so here what we have today is another age-old example of somebody who has been in the industry for a long time and owns a lot of nice suits and charges an exorbitant fee and has gone and invested in a company that 9 out of 10 investors who are past the Fisher Price level of investing, meaning, you know, are not trading with Robinhood, even though I'm sure some Robinhood investors even avoided Riot Blockchain. Most of these investors that are of, you know, look, the truth is anybody that can walk and chew gum at the same time understood that they were taking a significant risk investing in Riot. Except for Dennis Gartman. And why should we expect him to understand that? After all, he's been in the industry for, what, 4 decades or something ridiculous, I'm sure. So excuse me for having a little bit of well, I think the whole fucking thing's funny. My German's a little rough. So we'll just say that. But I find this hilarious. And I find it even more hilarious that that it was CNBC that aired the exposé. Because from what I've heard, he gets a lot of airtime on CNBC because he has some close ties there. But apparently, his ties are not close enough for somebody to tap him on the shoulder and say, Dennis, just an FYI, buddy. We're doing a little thing on Monday. And by the way, Dennis, there's no way you're long Riot Blockchain, right? I mean, I'm just telling you, just to tell you, you know, just because I feel like I have to, I'm sure you don't own the stock, you know. I'm sorry, what's that? Oh, you are long. Oh, in your IRA. Well, holy fuck, because Michelle Caruso Cabrera is going to go for the proverbial nutsack on this company Monday. And we just wanted to make sure that, you know, you knew about it. But instead, Gartman goes down by those who are the closest to him. There's some type of sweet Shakespearean irony about the whole thing. Now I will say this. Look, I do not take pleasure in watching somebody blow up. You know, I've been there. It's a horrifying feeling. It's, I give him some credit for coming out and being so verbose in his explanation of what happened. You know, putting aside the fact that I'm just dumbfounded that he owned the stock to begin with, I do give him some credit for coming out and making a statement about it. I mean, I guess he has to. But this is one for the ages. So with that said, let's move on to other business. MDXG came out this morning with a notice that said they were going to have to delay their earnings report. This doesn't really come to the surprise of anybody, I think, with the exception of one or two journalists who will remain nameless, and whoever will find out tomorrow or the next day was long MDXG heading into today. All I'll say is if Gartman was long MDXG going into today, this will be, well, it really wouldn't surprise me, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So my guess as to what happened is as follows. If I had to guess, if I had to play devil's advocate about MDXG, here's what I would think. I'll run it back for you real quick. They announced this morning that they're going to have to delay filing their financials because they are conducting an internal review from the audit committee to take a look at all of the items that had been brought up by short sellers, namely allegations of channel stuffing and things of that nature and just general accounting fuckery. So the stock crashed about 40% today, 35 or 40%. My guess as to what would happen, and I had a conversation with a friend about this today, who I think is also dead on, is as follows. Ernst & Young is their new auditor, who came on some months ago and actually hasn't signed off on anything for them yet. And if I had to guess, I would guess that Ernst & Young finally started to realize that there are some serious criticisms being lobbed about the company. And my guess would be that they probably went to management and, you know, again, this is just a guess and this is all opinion and none of this is investment advice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can, you know, sue me if you want. I don't own anything. But my guess is that Ernst & Young went to them and probably said something to the effect of, if you guys don't conduct an internal investigation, we're not going to sign off on the audit. And it's that simple. And I also would probably guess that their audit fees are going to go way up, or as Mark Cahotas would say, way the fuck up. So I think one of two things will happen. They will conduct this quote-unquote internal investigation, and they will find no wrongdoing, and they will pay out the ass for their audit. If Ernst & Young decides to sign off on their financials, or this is the beginning of the end. And either way, I think that just this happening in and of itself is an ominous signal for MDXG. It's not a company that I would want to try and buy the dip on. It's not a company I would want to try and be long. And we also saw this morning that UBNT disclosed that they have received a subpoena. And this should come as no surprise to anybody. If you watched the last presentation that the CEO put on, which I forget what it was. It wasn't their annual general meeting. I think it was just an investor day. I retweeted a couple of tweets that I had put up. I think it was back in September when they did this. And CEO Robert Pera, who is worth more money than I will ever see in my entire life, got up on stage and promptly told shareholders, investors, and analysts that he had no clue what day sales outstanding were and who cares about juicing the numbers as long as EPS comes out good. And, oh, he made a number of baffling statements, all while standing there with his arms crossed and looking nervous. So others have commentated in the past that UBNT may also be engaging in similar types of, I would say, potentially questionable behavior as MDXG. And Citron Research actually came out and had published on both of these names, even though MDXG was really put on the map by Viceroy and Mark Cahotas, who I guess if you had to pick the two people quarterbacking that short campaign, it would be the two of them. But at some point, Citron weighed in on them also, and Citron also was the first to go out and call UBNT a fraud. So now we have the SEC looking into UBNT, and we have MDXG looking into themselves, I guess. And certainly on the news front for short sellers, it was an exciting morning. Neither of those two companies are names that I would want to be long. And in keeping with the Mark Cahotas mojo, I do like Overstock going forward. Again, none of this is investment advice, and everyone should keep in mind that I was pouring beer for a living 8 years ago. Having said that, your professional financial advisors and the guys that appear on CNBC were long Riot Blockchain, so I would normally say don't take me too seriously, but I feel like after Dennis Gartman just blew up his year on Riot Blockchain, I should say, well, maybe I do have at least some small clue as to what the fuck I'm talking about. With that said, I spent last week with a fund manager who I'm friendly with, who also helps operate a securities lending desk, and we had a really long talk about Overstock, and we had a chat about all of the infrastructure that's used to transact stock. So not just the prime brokerages and things like that, but the software that's used for clearing systems and the software that's used for securities lending. And what I gathered from that conversation with this person, who is, I would say, an expert, is that much of the software used for securities lending and for things like clearing stock is extremely old, from the 80s. And he even showed me some of the software. It looked like an old terminal that you would use, like an old like Unix terminal, or an old, like back when AT&T made those Unix terminals, like something you would see at a public library the first time that they computerized their catalog to the Dewey Decimal System. It, you know, one color, one cursor, you know, you hit one for one thing, you hit two for the other thing, you hit three for the other thing. It's this incredibly archaic system. And he also mentioned T0 by name and said something to the effect of, you know, it's good that this part of the supply chain in terms of securities lending and in terms of stock clearing is evolving. And after seeing these things, then it started to make sense to me. And I know Overstock trades a lot with Bitcoin, and I know they own some Bitcoin. So today Bitcoin was up at the open and Overstock was up at the open also. But having said that, I think T0 has some appeal because blockchain is a perfect application for securities lending. Securities lending has been a business where there have been notorious amounts of complaints on both sides of the equation, usually from bag holders that own, you know, worthless stocks that wind up going under. They're always claiming, you know, it was the naked short sellers, or, you know, there's X amount of shares outstanding and there's 10 times that amount short. And there's all these types of conspiracy theories that people use to make excuses for when they lose money. I mean, I know I was one of those people some years back before I figured out how everything worked. So it's just to blame short sellers. But the truth of the matter is, you know, we have this regulation SHO list, and we don't really have a centralized ledger that is universal that keeps track of securities lending. Otherwise, we wouldn't have failures to deliver. And a failure to deliver is, you know, when somebody loans out stock to short it, and when you go back to them to try and call the stock, instead of delivering it to you, they point to another guy and say, oh, I got it from him. And that guy points to another guy and says, well, I got it from him. And that guy points to another guy who says, I got it from him. And then next thing you know, he's pointing to the janitor on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, who's sitting in the corner picking his nose and eating his chicken tenders that he ordered for lunch. He looks up, you know, and has no clue what anybody's talking about. Sir, do you have the shares that we promised to deliver? He's like, look, man, I'm just looking for some barbecue sauce for these chicken tenders. That's it. So securities lending is something that could definitely benefit from, you know, the kind of open source and universal feel and tracking of blockchain. Let everybody know where all shares are at all times when you're lending out shares to borrow. And this way it'll be clear. And if you don't want to let the whole world know, you just let, you know, a certain, you let a subset of people that are involved in the lending process know where things are and when. And this creates accountability. It creates kind of like a mutual accountability between parties that are lending and borrowing shares. And in general, it's just a very good idea. So that part of the Overstock business appeals to me. There is an argument that the underlying business could be priced higher. After all, when you see a company like Wayfair trading for almost $100 a share, and they have yet to turn any type of material profit, you know, anything's possible, I guess. But I would view an investment in Overstock as an investment in T0 first, and then, you know, having the rest of the business as a call option. With that said, I like Overstock. I like the idea of T0. Makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is that people in this industry and that people that are in the financial commentary industry are more concerned about what they look like and what they're wearing and what they get credit for and what they don't get credit for, as opposed to having half a brain and just picking out quality ideas. And, you know, there's so many money managers and quote unquote professionals that do things like we saw with Dennis Gartman today. And that's part of the reason that I wanted to give myself a voice. I mean, I don't like to laugh at somebody that's blown up, but I find it to be a humbling and incredulous lesson that I hope many people pay attention to. And the next time CNBC wants a guest on, they should look to who is delivering content and who has done their research. Not somebody who is a friend of the producer or somebody who comes on all the time and they like having him on because they know he's not a wild card and he's not going to say anything crazy. Maybe you need some craziness. Maybe you need more people like Mark Cohodes on live financial news, you know, cursing and trying to get people's attention. Can't tell you how many times this guy was on BNN or other financial news networks or Real Vision or trying to make his case as to why investors should avoid MDXG. And look where we are today now. Now we're down 40%. So if CNBC had given somebody like Mark a voice and Mark was able to go on and state his case against MDXG, he may have saved some people some money today because he made a very common sense argument. Hey, it looks like there could be some channel stuffing at this company. It looks like this looks a lot like Arthrocare. Who knows? But CNBC wanted to air a segment, probably, with Dennis Gartman telling you that oil was not going to go above $44 again in his lifetime. Thus, another chapter in the Dennis Gartman saga comes and goes, and I just couldn't help but not voice my opinion today. Is this a double negative? I couldn't help but not say... The point is, I wanted to do a podcast, all right? Sometimes I look at my Twitter followers or I look at, you know, the podcast, by the way, did a lot better than I thought it would do over the first two episodes. You know, it's something a couple thousand people listened and I was able to get it on iTunes and the guys at Zero Hedge and Seeking Alpha were nice enough to let me syndicate it there. But sometimes I wonder, you know, how do I have 25,000 Twitter followers? I mean, I'm just... feel like just a regular person. I'm not some Ivy League discounted cash flow modeling financial analyst that put my time in as a junior broker and kiss somebody's ass in order to make partner at a major financial firm. I mean, I'm just a regular guy. I just kind of fell ass backwards into finance from the journalism angle and from the angle of I went to go work for a company that was public. So I learned how public reporting worked, and I feel like I got a pretty good education in how to be a skeptic, and I was raised in a household where bullshit was not tolerated and would be called out immediately. And so every once in a while, I think, you know, who are these couple thousand peoples? See, I can't even put a sentence together, let alone graduate from an Ivy League institution. But, you know, I think to myself, who are these couple thousand people that listen to the podcast? And who are the 25,000 people that follow me on Twitter? I mean, is it comic relief just to watch me, you know, spar with Charlie Gasparino? I mean, are they actually interested in what I have to say about finance? It's a little crazy. It's a little bewildering. You know, sometimes I stop and I'm like, wow, you know, I guess I kind of do have a voice. And certainly I've been wrong about a lot, but I haven't been wrong about everything. And maybe some people are taking notice of that. Maybe some people look at things like this Dennis Gartman Riot blockchain thing, and they start to realize, maybe just because you're wearing a suit and just because you're on CNBC doesn't necessarily equate to I have a clue what I'm talking about. I mean, there's guys that manage billions that have made horrifying investments. I get Jason Donville went on BNN and lost his mind for 20 minutes in an interview with Amber Kamwar defending Valiant when the stock was at 150. That guy has a yacht. That guy probably lives in a huge house. He probably drives a really nice car. Or as they said in the movie Orange County, he parties in Hawaii. This guy parties in fucking Hawaii, right? I don't know, folks. I don't have a yacht. I don't party in Hawaii. I don't have any fancy suits. I don't own a bow tie. I don't have crazy thick-rimmed Jason Donville-style glasses. But one thing is for sure, I was not long Riot Blockchain on Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, good fight and good night.